The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO abduction phenomenon. Our guest today is Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. Reverend Carter is originally from Baltimore, Maryland. And he moved to New York City in 1980 and lived there for 27 years. Working as a professional actor before moving to Asheville, Michael is an ordained interfaith minister and received his BA degree in letters from the College of New Rochelle, where he graduated cum laude. He received his master's in divinity degree from Union Theological Seminary in New York City, class of 2000. Michael was trained as an anti-racism trainer and has been recognized by President Clinton for his efforts. Longtime UFO contactee, his first book, Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible, published in March of 2014, was number one on Amazon's list of UFO-related books. Author Whitley Strieber referred to the book as the best book ever written on the topic. He has been a guest of numerous talk shows, to include George Nouri's Coast to Coast radio show and George Nouri's TV show Beyond Belief, and many others. Michael has written articles on the topic of UFOs and religion for such publications as UFO Magazine, Alien Encounters, and the MUFON UFO Journal. His most recent book is entitled Initiation, the Spiritual Transformation of the Experiencer. So, here to tell us about it is Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. Welcome, Reverend.
Hey, thanks for having me on, David. It's a pleasure.
Oh, our pleasure. So, I read the book as well and enjoyed it very much, found it very enlightening and interesting. But your personal experiences, now, can you tell us about some of your personal experiences mm-hmm. as an ET experiencer?
Yeah. My first one that I remember that was there was no doubt, at least to me, was December 28, 1989. And I was coming back home from visiting the pyramids in Chichen Itza and Tulum. I went with my girlfriend at the time to Mexico. And on the way back, when we got to JFK, I had been invited to a party before we left in Hell's Kitchen. And it was so cold, but I kind of wanted to glow. And, you know, I just got back from Mexico. It was like 85, 90 degrees, and people were freezing their you-know-what's off in New York. So I kind of wanted to glow. So I went, and my girlfriend said, you go. I'm exhausted. So I went to the party, and, you know, no beverages, no alcoholic beverages. I probably OD'd on deviled eggs. I God forgive me, I love them so much. But I had a ton of those, yeah. And so I came back home, and I just remember, and even to this day, I don't know whether I had to get up to go to the bathroom or I just sensed something. And I usually sleep on my stomach. Yes, I know that's not the best. And I turned around and there was a being at the foot of my bed. Now, this is December 28th, 1989 in the Excelsior Hotel, still there, 45 West 81st Street between Columbus and the park, right across the street from the planetarium. And there was a being at the foot of my bed that the head looked like this. But.
Okay, you're describing a, for those who can't see it, it's a typical gray long.
Yeah. This individual, though, was kind of chalk white, about 4 feet tall, had on a, it was like a jumpsuit. It was real tight fitting. It looked like Reynolds wrap. That I remember, and real spindly. And I mean, I thought my heart was going to come through my chest. My girlfriend did not wake up. I have a little caveat about that. I'll share in a moment. I was terrified. Mm-hmm. Around this individual was a blue light, and around that was a bright white light. So my room was lit up like Times Square, literally. I pulled the covers up over my head and got into the fetal position. And I heard this swishing, like, and for a moment, I thought I was outside because I was freezing. Mm. When I pulled the covers down, I was back in my room. But I didn't know I was back in my room. I thought, you know, I just didn't know. I just know all of a sudden it was freezing and where it was warm. The little caveat is when the book came out in August, and I mentioned this, what I'm talking to you about in the book, mm-hmm. and she said to me, and I sent her a copy of the book, and she said, Michael, you're bringing back all these memories. She said, I remember that night. She said, I've never seen you so scared. And she said, and I remember seeing these shadowy figures in the room, right. But I just felt like it'll be okay. I'm tired. I'm going to go to sleep, which is not really a natural kind of reaction.
No, not at all.
But that was my very first. And that's what I talked about when Bill and I were on Abduction Diaries, which he reminded me about 20 years ago.
Okay, Abduction Diaries. Now, this was sci-fi.
That's how Bill and I met.
Okay, this was a sci-fi production?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And for those who haven't seen it, could probably maybe go to, how would you get a hold of that? Is it on YouTube? Can you go to sci-fi?
It used to be on YouTube. I was telling Bill before you guys came on that my girlfriend, I think she bought it. You know, I think you could stream it, or she bought it. This was very recently in the past 6 weeks because she had never seen it. And I don't know what she paid, and she watched it. It was about an hour long. So you can still, it's still showing.
It's still showing what, from Amazon or?
I'm sorry, was it, you know, if you Google it, Abduction Diary, Steven Spielberg, it comes up. It's still actually, you can still view it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
After all these years, yeah.
Spielberg, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and that's where, and then Spielberg went on and used that as the basis for his series Taken.
Right. I was going to say Spielberg does a lot of that.
Yeah.
Not only sci-fi or not sci-fi, but documentaries on UFOs and alien abduction, but television shows and the like. He's got quite a interest in the subject.
Yeah, he does. He seems to. It's always mm-hmm. interesting to me, you know, when he's always called, you know, he's at the White House and I'm sure they share stuff. It's just always interesting, that connection between Hollywood and Washington and all that kind of stuff.
Have you talked to Steven Spielberg? You say he's been at the White House. Have you talked to Spielberg on his visits to the White House?
No. I just know that, especially when those productions were out, and even I think with Close Encounters, I mean, that, you know, it was public knowledge. You can probably, again, find that on the internet,
right,
where, you know, he's at the White House and what have you.
Right.
And of course, there's been several books written about the connection between Hollywood and Washington around this topic.
Do you think Hollywood is trying to, or has been trying to, let the truth out to the public through their sci-fi?
I think so. We're being spoon-fed. Probably Stephen Bassett would have some things to say. Brother Bassett would have some things to say about that. But I would think so. You know, my only concern is there's a new movie called Out, Invasion. Those types of movies where, you know, we need an enemy and,
Independence Day.
Yeah, and this new one, Invasion, is out. And, you know, when the military was talking about, just coming, they weren't as transparent as one would have liked, but just to talk about where they're flying over our airspace and the whole, you know, it's that kind of, when the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And, you know, I can see a couple years from now that we have a new enemy, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, these sci-fi movies, you know, is the truth about UFOs and abductions may be fascinating, but they really don't hold one's interest unless you make them the bad guys and we got to fight them off.
Yeah. That's troubling to me in some ways, but, you know, that's just me.
I need to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with interfaith minister, author, and ET experiencer, Reverend Michael J. S. Carter. So that was your first experience?
Yes.
What year was that?
December 28, 1989.
89. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about a couple more that you may have?
I can tell you about a healing I had because I brought these people out because I wanted you to see the different beings that I have encountered. Here's a little praying mantis.
Long neck with big eyes. It looks like
it's a praying mantis. I tried to get a friend of mine. She's a very talented artist, and I was trying to get her to, here's the reptilian, to just send me, to make for me these statues of the beings that, see, this is an Arcturian person. Notice the head.
Looks more like a ghost.
Well, I guess you could say that, but this is what they look like to me. And so let me jump ahead to July 4th, 2013 at 9:50 p.m. my Eastern Standard Time. The backstory is I'm in this apartment now. It sounds like a country western song, a blues song. My dad died. I was getting fired from my job as a chaplain, and I was getting divorced. And so it was just not the greatest time. And I had a blood clot. And I don't have a history of blood clots. And I didn't even know what it was. I had a clot on my right leg from my ankle up to the groin area. I was so ignorant. I thought it was I pulled a muscle. But a friend of mine said that no one has that kind of pain from a pulled muscle. And it was really big. I mean, I'm a thin person. My leg was, it looked like one of LeBron James. I wish I was built like that. I wish I was had that kind of those legs. So anyway, the backstory is this. I was going through those transitions in life, and I had a lot of friends who serve in 5th Special Forces in Southeast Asia, and I remember them telling me, those who talked about it, some of my friends just, you know, they just couldn't go there, and they were telling me about, you know, being in the base camp or going on patrol, but you just got used to this. You could be being shelled, and if you, you know, if you could catch a couple hours sleep, you just did it, whether you're in your foxhole or not. Mm-hmm. The whole thing about that was we had terrible thunderstorms that night, July 4th, 2013 here. I do not like fireworks. And I was going every year with my ex and with my daughter, you know, trying to be a good dad to these fireworks. And it was just more hassle. You get there at 7, they don't start them until 9:30. You're sitting next to people. You're so close together. The ants are eating you up. People are like, I just didn't like it.
Sounds like fun.
You're out there for 2.5 hours for a half hour show.
Right.
So when it rained that day, I was so happy that they canceled it. And again, it was 9:50. And again, I was lying down. And, you know, I can't explain it. Sometimes when they come, the air gets really still. It's just, I can't explain it. There's a heaviness. The energy changes in the room because I just felt like somebody was behind me. And when I turned around, there was, he didn't look like this. This is the rendition of a Nordic, kind of blonde hair. But this individual that I saw had like a kind of like a page boy haircut, real, real pale skin, blue eyes, but had a cowl. I was going to say a hoodie, but it was a cowl on and a rope belt, but really, really built. I mean, like, I jokingly say maybe they have a gym or something on the ship, but this guy was ripped. And I turned around and he was, well, you can't see, but right there, his head was almost hitting my bedroom. And I started to get out of the bed, and he held his hand out like that, and an apple green light came out, and it hit me in my stomach area. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel it. I just saw it. And then he dissolved. It was like all the molecules just dispersed. Mm-hmm. So, again, you know, the adrenaline.
Pixelated, some describe that as pixelation.
I don't know what it's called. It's almost like a Star Trek thing where the molecule
right.
is there and it's not there. And every time I have these encounters, I got so much energy, like for days afterwards. And the first thing I did was I looked at my leg, and it wasn't the first thing, but I just looked down and my leg was normal. The first person I called was Preston Dennett. I don't know if you know Preston.
At a mama show.
Yeah, he's written a couple books on UFOs, UFO healings. Yeah. And it was like 10 of 7 his time. So I don't know, maybe he was hanging out, but nobody picked up. And I called my ex and my daughter. And so the next morning, I was up most of the night. I went over there and I showed them, and they both gasped, like almost, they were like, oh my God, they healed your leg. It was gone. Now, remember, I was injecting myself with something called a Nexoparin. My whole stomach was black and blue. I had to do that for 10 days to try to shrink this clot. And later they put me on Coumadin. They call it Wayfarin or what have you. And so, I did finally get in touch with Preston. I told him about it. But I had to go to the doctor because every week, every 10 days, they would stick me and take my blood and you know, just to see what the levels were because of the clot. And I remember the conversation. They were just not feeling what I was saying because I wasn't going to tell them what happened. They'd have locked me up. So, and they wouldn't let it go. And I said, you know, how did this happen? I said, I don't know. The medicine's working. They said, no, Mr. Carter, you were just here 10 days ago. What happened? And finally, after about, seemed like an eternity, probably was about 4 minutes, I was getting really uncomfortable because, you know, and I just said, look, I don't know what happened. You don't know what happened. Why don't we just call it even? And I'm better. I said, aren't you happy for me? And they were like, oh, well, of course we're happy for you. We're just trying to find. I said, I don't know. Things happen. And we just kind of left it at that. And I got off the Coumadin, which is what I really wanted to do, because they had me on it indefinitely. They wanted me to probably stay on it for the rest of my life. And
so according to the doctors, this medication, the Coumadin and what have you, would not have done that, not in the 10 days we're talking
no,
about.
No way. No way. Mm-hmm. And so that was another instance. But in between that time, you know, from probably 89 up until fairly recently, I was having experiences. Usually I'd be paralyzed. Nothing was ever. Some people said, well, why didn't you ask where they're from? And, you know, my level of fright, that's not what I was thinking. I was thinking, is my heart going to come through my chest? I mean, because that's what you try to wrap. Well, that's what I try to wrap my mind around. These people just pop up in my room.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to deal with that kind of reality. At the very beginning, when Bud was still alive, Bud Hopkins, he had regressed me. And at the very first time, Dr. Jean Mundy, who I found her name in the back of a book called Encounters by Dr. Edith Fiore. And so they helped me deal with that through hypnosis, because I was really, I was having problems coping, mm-hmm. Sleeping. Even to this day, you know, I still have, you know, I'm 64 years old. You know, I'm always been afraid of the dark, but I keep my blinds shut at night, as if that's going to keep them from coming. But psychologically, it right. helps me. My daughter, in the meantime, you know, she, you know, I just can't sleep with my blinds open. I'm trying to work kind of through that. You know, sometimes I will wait till the last minute that I'm almost asleep before I turn the light out. Mm-hmm. Again, in my mind, as long as the light's on, no one's going to come. But right. you know, that's not true. But right. It just helps me. But I've incorporated it into my life. I kind of look at my experiences in general as a positive thing. I know everybody can't or does. And I get that. I just wanted to let people know that it doesn't always mean something evil or right. that kind of thing.
That was my next question. How do you, how have you been able to assimilate your ET experiences with your religious faith?
Well, my faith has changed in the sense of, it's just a broader perspective. I can easily live with mystery now. A good friend of mine is my brother, Dr. Barry Downing, who I stand on his shoulders, of course, and the shoulders of other people. When I discovered his book, Water to a Drowning Man, I mean, we were both clergy. He's not an experiencer, but those ideas were there. Yes, Eric, you know, Eric Van Doniken, but Barry was the one who kind of got me going. And for a while, I identified as Christian in the sense of I did what Barry had done. Barry just kind of put the UFO phenomenon in a Christian perspective, but that didn't work for me. It did for a while. But you know, when you look at all these civilizations, whether they're Aboriginal civilizations, you know, even in the Buddhist culture, in the Vimanas, in Hindu cosmology, there's always these beings coming down from the sky. It's everywhere. And so I just couldn't just layer it over. I agree with Barry, but he teases me. He says, you want your God to be warm and fuzzy. I it's not that. It's just that when I read about Yahweh, condoning some of the things that were condoned, smashing babies' head against the stones, going into Canaan and killing men, women, and children, I just had to say, is that the kind of God I want to worship? And so now I don't even know. It's certainly not an anthropomorphic kind of a deity where I'm coming from, but it's just I'm part of it, whatever that is. And if when I tap into that, it seems to make me feel better. Mm-hmm. But it's not that heaven, hell, I needed a savior, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, Jesus, I'm a man of the West. I'm educated here in the West. If I was somewhere else, maybe it'd be Buddha or Muhammad. But, those stories, that narrative strikes something in me. But I also realize that there are other paths, and those paths are just as valid. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have the uniqueness of Christianity where this is the only way. And, yes, there are other ways. But come on, you wink, wink. You know, Christianity is really the way. I don't have that.
Right.
So and so for my Christian friends, I'm not Christian enough. And of course, for my friends who are more liberal in their bent, they'll say, well, this is metaphor, Michael. This is, you can't take that literally, but I do, in the sense of when I look at the Bible and the Quran and, you know, at least the three monotheistic religions, I do see many things. And one of those things is I see UFOs. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take away from the life lessons and the profound teachings, not at all. But I think it's, you can go through this with your eyes wide shut.
Mm-hmm. When you had this experience, when the, as you described, possibly a Nordic, as we call them, you followed you, Nordic, blonde hair, fair skin.
Yeah. That's the first time I saw that brother before.
Yeah, very fair skin, very fine features, very beautiful humanoid being.
Yeah.
You saw this being.
Yes, I did.
Okay, when you saw them, could you see how some people 2,000, 4,000 years ago could equate that being with angel?
Oh, very much so. I would take it a step further. He could have been brown. He could have been brown with, you know what I'm saying? He was humanoid. I'm thinking, because I don't want to, because we don't know if they were, they're different races. So I don't want to get this Eurocentric blonde, blue-eyed angel good kind of paradigm. I know that's not what you're implying, but I want to be careful with that. I'm saying that because angel just means messenger. Nowhere in the Bible does it say that these beings had wings.
No.
I'm not going to be careful with that, because I know some people will have called me and said, I've seen angels, they have wings. I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying nowhere in the Torah and in the New Testament. I believe our ancestors put wings on it to let us know these beings could fly. But definitely, I think they would say that they were messengers. I would say, do you think, Michael, that our ancestors thought these were gods? I would say yes, because of the technology. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to explain in their nomenclature and their vocabulary what they were seeing, right? If you look at Joseph Bloomrich's book, The Spaceships of Ezekiel, and of course he's got this brother, he got it patented. He's already gone now, but he was a NASA engineer, and he looked at what Ezekiel said he saw, and used the metrics and what have you, and he said, this is what I think this is. I think that our ancestors were trying to tell us, that these beings flew, and the technology was so awesome and so awe-inspiring that they had to be gods. What else could they have been?
Right.
So, I think it's very easy. But I think whether they were blonde or not.
Well, that's just one species. That's just one species.
Exactly.
But I think if they had have seen, let's say, the greys, the small greys. Or the
reptilians.
The reptilians. Yes. They would not have worshipped them or thought, oh, this must be a god. They would have looked at them in a different light, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, David. And again, I know that's not what you were implying. I just want to be clear, because there's something, and sometimes subconsciously, because the other thing is that they ate. I mean, when Abraham and Sarah see these astronauts, well, that's what I'm going to call them. Yeah. I mean, they fed them, you know, it was a Jewish hospitality of rituals that you, when the stranger came and they, you know, Sarah was cooking, and so they ate. I forget what exact exact verse it is, but Yahweh talks about smelling the meat and salivating. I mean, these don't sound like gods to me, but to our ancestors they were. But because you figure, well, do gods really have to, you know, have a, you know, some barbecue or what have you? No, but definitely they were interacting with these beings, you know, whether they're chariots or, you know, Jesus coming on a cloud and leaving on a cloud. I mean, those are the definitions, at least to my mind, of what a UFO is, that it's intelligent. There's an intelligence about it. It's coming and going. It's hovering. I don't know what else it could be.
When they say chariots, we think of the chariots, horse pulled chariots, but actually what a chariot was to them was a form of conveyance.
Yes.
So this is a UFO, as we call them, UAPs, whatever, a form of conveyance.
Yeah.
That flies, and what else do they call it? They had to call it something that within their perspective.
That's right. That's right. I mean, in the Exodus, you know, which is a very crucial story, because there's no Jewish religion until the Exodus, and so you know, it's just a ragtag group of people who were working for free for this Pharaoh, and so they got tired. You know, people get tired, and so. But, you know, it's the pillar of cloud by day. It's the pillar of fire by night. Well, we have modern UFO stories where some of these things are camouflaged in clouds. So at night, it's the pillar of fire. So it's glowing. They're following it. It hovers. We could talk about that with the birth of Jesus. A lot of layers to that. But, you know, and it's flying and it stops and it gives them some food, manna. Only God knows what they were eating. And then, you know, the morning they pack up and they follow it. Ezekiel goes up. Elijah gets up. No one knows where he goes. He gets on this like an Uber and he's gone. No one ever comes back. I think as a clergy person, eventually it's going to be embarrassing in some ways. But I think, you know, clergy, the religions, especially the monotheistic religions, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, we're going to have to talk because this stuff definitely affects religion. You know, it just does. You can't, and no one, not many people are talking about it. I mean, Barry is, and Barry's retired, and he's kind of tired, and I get that. I mean, I'm talking about it. Morris K. Jessup wrote a book back in the 50s. Of course, he died under mysterious circumstances, called UFOs in the Bible. Had some female energy in the house with Reverend Virginia Brasington. Had never heard of her, have her book over here. She's from Asheville, North Carolina. There you go. And, you know, there was another sister who, God, she died early of cancer. I have some of her books here. And she wasn't a clergy person, but she was a self-taught scholar around biblical stuff. But no, you know, we really need to be talking about how this influences religion. And it does.
I wrote a book on it myself.
Okay, see? Well, we need more people doing that and having these conversations.
So, have you ever had to endure ridicule, speaking of this, ridicule from peers within the
Church? Yeah. I had a woman try to get me fired from my church, and they surprised me. They stuck up for me. And she gave a lot of money. She gives a lot of money to the church, and, you know, church politics is deadly, and even to this day. And she said, I think she saw Ancient Aliens or something, and she said, you know, I turned on the TV and I saw my minister talking about little green men. That's what she said.
little green men.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I thought she would go away. Well, maybe that was just wishful thinking.
Yes.
But she didn't go away. And we finally had to sit down with my board. And in the UU world, the minister is not the boss, the congregation is, which I kind of like. And they stood up for me. They said, he doesn't preach it from the pulpit. He's probably on to something, but we don't see the problem here. And of course that aggravated her even more. Just in the past 2 years, we've started being a little more friendly with each other.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Catholic Church knows a lot more than they're saying.
You know, I'm going to tell you, of course, I'm with you. I think like Hinduism, I think Buddhism, even though I look at that more as a philosophy than as a religion. And I think Catholicism would fare pretty well if we had, pun intended, a come to Jesus meeting, because they already make room in their paradigm for lesser gods and goddesses. Now, Catholic Church may call them saints. At one time, Mary was more popular than her son, but in the Catholic Church, which that didn't last long, but it was for a few years. Mm. But because they make room for other deities.
Yeah.
The Baptists, and I was raised Baptist, we don't do that. So that's probably why they don't want to talk about it, because it opens up. But that's the thing. If you can live in mystery, then you can easily say, I don't know. The death knell for any type of faith is certainty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't, it's just bad religion, man. Yeah. When you reduce all the mysteries of life to this formula, to this creed. Mm-hmm. And life is not like that.
No.
And so, and this is why you have people leaving organized religion, maybe going to disorganized religion, who knows? But they're leaving because, you know, we're asking them to leave their brains and their minds at the door.
Yes, yes.
It's just.
And if you question the minister, the pastor, the priest, don't question.
You're a troublemaker. Yeah. So you know,
which is their way of saying I don't have a clue. You know.
Right, but they're putting it back on you.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's okay. That's why I love, you know, well, it's not just the Lakota, right? They call the Great Spirit Wonkatonkin. What does that mean? The Great Mystery.
Yeah.
And it's okay, because any God that you can define is really not a God. And the finite will never be able to comprehend the infinite, at least not while we're in these bodies.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, I know people, it's like they have God's phone number or something. They seem to be able, they're so certain mm-hmm. that they're right. I just kind of just go the other way.
Mm-hmm. I need to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with interfaith minister, author, and ET experiencer, Reverend Michael J. S. Carter. What are some of the indicators that one might be an experiencer?
Wow. Okay, let me be clear with that. when I wrote about the indicators in the book, I want to be clear, not every person who has these is an experiencer, but the reverse of that is, but a lot of experiencers have these indicators. Does that make sense to you? That's in chapter two. So I'll just read you a few of them that I have found. Beliefs as indicators. The first one I put was interest in UFOs and the idea that they exist. I meet people and they are so intense. Sometimes that's all they can talk about. And I'm like, what happened to them? You know, some people are interested in other topics. These folks, that's all they can talk about. And I'm like, how did you get there? What makes you so committed to this topic? For myself, and I put in here, belief in other dimensions and that there's intelligent life outside of the one that we live in. I did not believe that at all until I started having these, you know, not maybe a few years before, but I drank the Kool-Aid. I remember someone asking me, downtown Baltimore, I was a youngster, you don't believe in UFOs? I said, no. And they looked shocked. And they said, why? I said, because it's not in the Bible. What a difference 40 years makes. An interest in ancient history, metaphysics, and the occult sciences. Mm-hmm. A deep concern for feeling an urgency about what we're doing to the ecosystem. And again, there are people who haven't had UFO experiences that have these things, but most of the experiencers that I know have them. I started dabbling into tarot reading. I could always see auras. And what I got was that the more open you... Science says, show me, and I'll believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Spirituality says, believe it, and I'll show you.
Very good. Very good. I like that.
Yeah. Thoughts of impending earth and societal changes. Most of these folks question the status quo. A lot of them had this strong sense of equality and justice for people, knowing and believing there's more to life than we're told. A lot of folks suddenly changed their dietary habits. They just like a whole different person. Those were the beliefs as indicators. The physical indicators, dreams or nightmares of strange beings and other worlds, precognitive, inspirational, or you're getting pertinent information. A lot of people having OBEs, NDEs, dreams of meeting other beings, dreams of levitating or flying, skills in telepathy, clairaudience, clairvoyance, psychometry, telekinesis, memories that don't kind of fit the facts of activity in early childhood. Nosebleeds. I had a lot of nosebleeds when I was a kid, and I didn't know where they were coming from. At first I thought my ear was bleeding. I'd wake up in the morning, there'd be blood on my pillow. Sometimes in the literature, people find out that they have, and I don't know if I have that, but they have some type of tracking device, that kind of thing. Somehow feeling downloads are more intelligent than you used to be, having access to information that you don't know how you got it. And then there's the spiritual indicators. Sudden reversals. Well, they may seem sudden in your spirituality, in your religious thoughts or beliefs. All of a sudden, you just kind of change. An intense desire to study comparative religion. A belief that humankind can advance to a more advanced state of consciousness than where we are now. And finally, just this desire to serve. That I want to be on the right side of things as things go forward. I want to be part of the solution and not the problem. And again, I reiterate that you don't have to be an experiencer to have these indicators, but most contactees that I talk to have them.
And if someone believes that they might be an experiencer, what would you recommend they do?
What I have recommended is, I put a couple people, well, I would refer them to Bill, I would make, try to get them in a support group. It's almost like therapy. It's good to do the one-on-one stuff, but it's something healing about sitting across from another human being and them saying, you know what, that happened to me as well. There's something healing about that. So I would ask them to seek out some type of support group. I would also suggest that if they could, to get regression with all its flaws, because it's just sometimes just getting it out in a non-judgment, someone who's going to be non-judgmental. Is those things, at least they helped me. They were really, really, they helped my growth because I was a wreck. I put a couple people's names in the book who I knew were still practicing, seeing experiencers and contactees, but definitely there's something healing about getting in a group.
Yeah. Well, MUFON is not necessarily a support group, but it's a great place to start.
Yes. It's
people who, a lot of whom have had the same experience, and even if they haven't, you can talk to them, and they're not going to ridicule you or because out of the sheer fact that so many people have had this experience and are not coming forward. And the more people come forward, the more people will come forward. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I just referred someone and to Bill again, and your point is well taken. And I realize you guys are not, a support group as far as the therapeutic value of, right, counseling or that kind of thing. But again, it's the non-shaming kind of environment.
That in itself is therapeutic.
Yes, exactly. So that's what I would do. I was fortunate to get in a support group when I was living in New York. And it meant the world to me because I was struggling.
Right, man. And if and when skeptics finally accept alien visitation through undeniable evidence, show me, right? if that comes to pass, do you think that they are more likely to turn toward organized religion or away from
it? Oh, I think the whole religion thing will be gone. I don't mind. I can find another job. Religion's going to have to change. Mm-hmm. And for so long, religion, not always, but it's been the taillight instead of the headlight, is, in times of change. I think that religion and science, which we see it happening, quantum physics is showing us that there's a spiritual side to science. Mm-hmm. And I think contacts show that because many of these beings have seemed to at least got a handle on the science of maybe having 34th century technology and a sense of spirituality. Not all. I love Brother Greer, but I can't say that all these people mean us well. But mm-hmm. I will say that the fascination with UFOs and religion is because of that intersection of technology and spirituality, which I feel that we as a species are going to have to come to grips with, or else we're going to destroy each other. We're already destroying the planet, and we're going to destroy each other. So it's like giving a gun to a baby. We have all the technological know-how, but we don't have the spirituality, to my mind, and that's not religion necessarily, to be able to handle it. And it's a mess. It's a hot mess.
So are you saying that people would turn away from religion?
I think they would if religion did not
satisfy them.
One thing, Brother David, no, I think that they would turn to religion if religion didn't grow, if religion didn't start to expand. Because now religion teaches, for the most part, that you are separate from all that is, that you need God, you need a savior, you need, and you're a miserable sinner and all that. And we're saying that, no, you, we're not that. We are part of, I'm using the word God, you can use whatever, we're part of that. And so we need to start saying, to get past this illusion of separation. And religion teaches separation. I'm saved and you're not. Okay, and that's the death knell. We are all connected.
Right.
And so this new spirituality, if you will, I'm not talking about in a woo-woo term, but I'm just saying this new way that we're getting it now, that I don't care who you sleep with. I don't care if you're gay. I don't care if you're white or black. We're all in this together. And that's what religion needs to do. And what I do to you, I do to myself. What I do to you, I'm doing to nature. We got to get past that illusion of separation because it's going to do us in. Right. And it is an illusion. Right. I mean, for instance, when we look at race, science tells us there's no such thing as race. That is a social construct. That is a social construct. So now we look at the ecology. You know, I was taught, you know, the Bible says you go out and you conquer nature. Well, you can't conquer nature. And nature does not show mercy. And we see, you know, nature says you follow these laws, and if you don't follow them, it's going to be a problem. And now we're seeing what's happening because we've separated ourselves from our world. And it's not pretty.
Not at all. So what is the most valuable lesson that you'd say you've garnered from your ETI experiences?
I would say that I had to look at my fear. I had to look at fear. And I still have plenty of it. but I'm talking about in my life. When I was having these experiences, and yes, these bizarre looking people would come in my room, and you know, and so it's a heart stop. They would paralyze me, show me pictures of stuff, but the only time they ever hurt me was the one time they hurt me, and I asked them not to, and the next time they came, they did something. And we can talk about that. And they showed me what they were doing. The point I'm trying, it didn't hurt. What I'm trying to say is these folks never really hurt me. And if anything, my spiritual growth was expedited. Now I was already on a path. So it wasn't like a magic wand. You know, you have to work.
Mm-hmm.
You have to work at your inner life. But By the fear, I had to say, okay, Michael, where else in your life, not ET stuff, do you let fear rule? And so I would say to someone else, I would say what I told you, that science says, you know, you show me and I'll believe. Spirituality says, believe and I'll show you. But the other thing is that we need to look at our fears, because the fears keep us from living life fully. Einstein said that the most important question that you ever ask as a human being is the universe friendly or not? Because the way you answer that question is the way you're going to live your life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you feel that the universe is not a friendly place, it's going to be a journey. It's going to be a journey anyway.
In other words, it's what you make it, right?
Yeah. It definitely is that. And that's not, you know, you don't need an ET to come down and tell you that.
No.
There are people who get that. And I didn't need that either. But, it's a long journey from here to here. And so, I say, oh, yeah, we're all one. I get it. But it's another thing to have to live it. It's another thing to get up in the morning and do it. And so that's what I would say. But examine your fears, because they will show you. Those will be They're like gemstones. It's uncomfortable, but your whole life will open up, because people who don't have a lot of fear, they're harder to control, but that's the reward of living a fuller life. And so I know these brothers and sisters are out here, these star people. It helps me get along with my earthly brothers and sisters. And, you know, some people can't get with it, and that's okay. It reminds me of the teaching that Yeshua said. He said, in the context, he says, if I speak to you of earthly things and you don't understand, how will you understand when I speak to you of heavenly things?
All right. That's right. So that is what you would say would be your biggest lesson, your most valuable lesson is
to look at your fear.
Look at your fear.
Because that's standing in the way of so much joy and adventure. And it's fear is fear is the buzzkill.
So even if one is an experiencer and you know, they're bogged down with this, I've been abducted and I recall a lot of the abduction and I fear it and what have you. Just go on with your life, because
you're going to have to. I mean, let's say I get a visit tonight or you get a visit tonight.
Yeah.
You know, I got to work tomorrow.
Yeah,
right. The world's not going to stop. I got to pick up my daughter from school, man. Mm-hmm. I got some bills piled up over here. I need to take a good look at it. And I don't want to be flippant with it, but eventually you're going to have to be right here. Who was it? I think it was Emerson. Listen, you don't want to be so heavenly minded that you're no earthly good. And, you know, I gotta go to work.
Right.
And, you know, I'll be buzzed and I'll call Bill or I'll call someone and go, man, let me tell you what happened last night. But in the meantime, you got to get on with life, and hopefully you can integrate this into your life. I had friends I had to stop being friends with. Not that they were bad people. God knows it's not up to me but they can't talk about anything else. If you're not talking about star people or propulsion systems, or there's no connection.
Mm-hmm.
And they're stuck.
Right.
They're stuck. And life is so beautiful. And, you know, I got a child and, you know, there's a whole bunch going on and I want to be able to enjoy that and be present. And, right. And, you know, this is what we're talking about.
Where can people go to check out more of your work?
They can go to Amazon. Just go to Amazon. Of course, there's a lot of YouTube stuff. I still pop up on Ancient Aliens once in a while, but if they want to get my books, they can go to Amazon or Barnes and Nobles and just type in Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. They can write me michaeljscarter@gmail.com. My website is michaeljscarter.com, and I'll respond. If they want to have a dialogue, I try to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Reverend Carter, I want to thank you once again so much for joining us today. And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR.FM homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you'll find my website with all the archived shows. Please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.